What is up, everyone? Welcome to a very special episode of the FanCast Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Sean O'Connell. We also have our Marvel expert, John Golston, on the line, because there's some really big news, and that's why we're getting together for this special podcast. Earlier today, Disney and Marvel announced a joint collaboration with Netflix, in which they are going to produce four live-action television shows on Netflix. Each one will have 13 episodes beginning in 2015, and they will be focused on four different characters: Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage. And then also, like they're doing on the big screen, all of these solo hero shows will culminate in a miniseries called The Defenders, which will kind of bring them all together, I guess, as they go and try to defeat a common enemy. So this is really big news. And so, Sean, I'm going to go to you first on what your reaction to this news is. Did you, like, expect something like this to happen? I know that there was conversations before that Marvel was going to try to expand and do something perhaps with Netflix. What's your reaction to the news, to the characters they've chosen to go after? Where are you sitting at this?
I didn't expect it at all, but now that it's out there, it makes sense. Based on a lot of things that we're hearing about how studios are starting to think about different ways to expand how these universes are being presented. And you often hear, you know, Netflix being floated out there as a possibility, as a subsequent arm that can be used to extend universes. You know, I keep going back to Ron Howard talking about wanting to adapt Stephen King's book, The Dark Tower, that whole series. And at the time, they had this plan to use some theatrical, you know, some cable network. And it just sounded too ambitious at the time. Universal sort of tabled it. But if Marvel starts blazing that trail, you're going to see a lot more opportunities for large franchises that have a ton of story to tell, you know, trying to adopt that model. And I think that it's, I think these are good characters for Marvel to use, because I don't know if they'd make for good standalone films. Daredevil, I still argue Daredevil could have his own franchise, probably deserves his own franchise. But if they're going to use him as an anchor, you know, for this new Netflix experiment, I think that's a really wise idea. I'm surprised that The Punisher wasn't part of that plan, but maybe that just speaks to a larger story that they want to tell, or maybe he's not a factor there, or maybe he'll be a supporting character. To me, I'm just really excited by it.
Yeah, it's really cool news. John, I want to come to you now, because you are a Marvel expert and you know these characters more than anybody. Does it make sense, these four specific characters, does that make sense to you? Do they have a history together, these four? Maybe something with the Defenders. What's the history there? Does this make sense to you? Do you see this announcement and say, oh, that makes complete sense?
It makes sense. The Defenders thing is a little strange, and I'll get to that. And to answer Sean's point, I wouldn't be surprised at all if The Punisher shows up, especially on the Daredevil TV series or Netflix series. The characters all have like more of a street level background. You know, they're going to be grittier. It's going to be more urban and just more street, and probably less sci-fi than what we've seen, even on something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So they have that in common. You know, Daredevil, of course, is a Marvel legacy character. I think everybody, you know, is pretty familiar with him. Luke Cage and Iron Fist both share in common that they rose from cinematic trends of the 1970s. You know, Luke Cage was sort of a response to blaxploitation movies, and Iron Fist was sort of a response to kung fu movies. So Marvel kind of cashed in on the stuff that was popular at the time. You know, Luke Cage is an ex-con who gets powers through an experiment, and Iron Fist is the son of like a rich magnate who goes on to study these like special mystic martial arts and gets powers that way. Jessica Jones is actually a pretty new character. I think she's only about 13 years old as far as comics go. So she's relatively new, and she had a comic book called Alias, if anyone's interested in looking up her past adventures. Obviously, they can't call the show Alias because of J.J. Abrams' previous Alias TV series. But Jessica Jones has a romantic past with Luke Cage. And so I'm sure that they'll, you know, if there's any characters that are going to have some immediate crossover, I would imagine it would be Jessica Jones and Luke Cage on their respective shows. The Defenders thing is a little strange because traditionally the Defenders have consisted of Hulk, Doctor Strange, Namor, and Silver Surfer. There's been some other characters that have kind of come in and out of the mix, but none of the four announced characters are really associated with that Defender's name. I think from Marvel's end, they're looking at what names they have that have some brand name recognition, and Defenders has some brand name recognition. So to them, I don't think it matters really which characters they're throwing sort of into that brand name. There was a short-lived series from about 10 years ago called Marvel Knights, and the characters that are part of this four-series deal all appeared at various points in the Marvel Knights series. But again, Marvel Knights is not really a probably not really a good name for a team, and I think they already use the Marvel Knights branding for some of their movies like Ghost Rider and things like that. So it makes business sense for it to call it Defenders. I'm sure there are fanboys out there who are, you know, decrying the fact that, well, Daredevil is not a Defender, but I don't think it'll matter by the time the Defenders miniseries comes on.
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned a gritty street level feel to the series. There, I think they're all going to take place in Hell's Kitchen, New York. So that'll kind of be, I guess, the home base for all of this, and I guess in different pockets of that, it says deep into the gritty world of heroes and villains of Hell's Kitchen, New York. And so, yeah, so they're using that word gritty, and I guess it's going to be darker than the ABC show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And Sean, I'll ask you, do you think that this hurts Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or do you think that it helps it that they have this kind of more accessible primetime network show, and now they can kind of get a little bit grittier in Netflix? But how gritty can they really go? This is Disney. The movie's on the big screen. Thor: The Dark World hits theaters this weekend. It's fun. It's light. It's family-friendly to an extent. Do you think they're kind of going to take some real chances with these Netflix shows?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that it hurts Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at all. I think that just becomes another cog in the wheel, you know, that could provide for a little bit more crossover. We're going to see this crossover episode that's going to be tied to Thor, and there might be some opportunities for them to link Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to, you know, the Netflix shows. It makes it seem like that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really was that canary sent down the coal mine. Like, are people going to follow us to this other avenue? And even though you're starting to hear that the ratings are starting to dwindle on that show, I think it's a risk on Marvel's part because Netflix costs more money, and are people going to pay extra to follow a program, you know, whereas with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. they can just set their DVR, they can tune in and watch it live for free because it's over the channel. Yeah, I think that the ability of going onto Netflix gives them a little bit more freedom. They could have gone on an HBO, I guess, or something like that, and that would have given them a lot more freedom. But, you know, Eric, we had this conversation on podcast too, where a lot of the phase two, phase three bits of Marvel are going stronger into sci-fi fantasy, and I lamented that. I mean, I like the heroes that are a little bit more grounded in reality, things like Spider-Man, and I know the Fantastic Four wants to get off the ground, so it's another sort of potential sci-fi fantasy realm type story. I'm excited that the studio is not forgetting that there's a whole contingent of us out here who like reading about these guys who are fighting, you know, that doesn't have to always be a Thanos or a Galactus or a Silver Surfer. There can be some really exciting stories told with some street level heroes.
John, off of that, which of these characters or these stories are you the most excited to see as a Marvel fan?
For me, it's all about Daredevil. I think I've kind of been beating the drum for Daredevil to be a television series ever since Marvel got the rights back from 20th Century Fox. I think Daredevil's made for TV.
Why?
In the way, well, because beyond the superhero stuff, the character's day job is a lawyer. And I think that you can and law TV shows are just like that's a proven formula, you know, the lawyer show. And I think you get the best of both worlds. You can do the stuff that you can do in like a gritty cop or like action show, and you can mix it with sort of, you know, the long form trials that take place on really good law shows. It just seems to me like that's a perfect blend for television. It'll be interesting to see. You know, talking about the ratings or what they can get away with on Netflix, you know, they're not beholden to you know, the MPAA. So it's, there's no risk of like them, you know, being rated R or whatever, but Netflix allows them, I think, to explore stuff that maybe they may be trying to catch an audience that considers this stuff, classic must watch TV in the mold of Breaking Bad or The Wire. It'll be really interesting to see if they go that adult with these properties.
Yeah. Does it say in the release whether they're going to drop all 13 episodes of each thing at one time?
It does not say, but that is Netflix's model. So I would expect to see that when they launch a series, it's going to all go out at the same time. It'll be interesting because, you know, you're working with Disney and Marvel, and this is a powerhouse. And so I'm curious to see, but you know, Netflix has their thing, and that's what's been working for them. But yeah, you know, you bring up a good point, John. I'm curious, like, you know, if Daredevil starts out as sort of this Law and Order crossed with a superhero show, you know, the 12-year-old kid who's got a hankering to go see Thor: The Dark World, I don't know if they're watching that show on Netflix.
But I don't know. But I don't know if Disney's chasing that crowd, and that's what has me the most curious. Are they going after the lunchbox and action figure crowd with this, or are they going after the Walking Dead, Breaking Bad crowd? Are they going after the adult crowd, who the water cooler crowd, you know? And I my hope is that they're going after the water cooler crowd.
Yeah, yeah, it would be interesting route for them to take, and I think it would. There are audiences, perhaps that may find these shows that aren't watching Iron Man on the big screen and the Avengers, and they may kind of get a lot more people for it, I think. Sean, do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a great partnership for Netflix. They're finally aligning themselves with a proven studio or franchise that has a ton of content that they can constantly keep cranking out. You know, Arrested Development was a great comedic franchise to link themselves up with, and there was definitely some buzz around them releasing a new season of that. But with Marvel, the possibilities are endless. They can continually introduce new heroes. This isn't something where, you know, after a year or two, you're going to exhaust the resources. This could be a really exciting place for young directors to go to tap into. It's the line between television and film seems to be really disappearing.
It does, you know. And in terms of a timeline, we don't really know what's going to when all these going to happen. It says beginning in 2015, so we have to see what how they work. I don't know if they're going to do two of these a year, or one a year and build up to the Defenders. I mean, how far out, John, do you think? What would make sense in terms of a strategy in releasing these? How would you do it? Would you do it to coincide with the movies that are arriving on the big screen? Would you launch each TV series in between the Marvel movies?
I think they're going to – I would imagine if I remember my schedule correctly, I think that they've got a pretty clear fall and holiday slate in 2015, because they'll be wanting to put a lot of their marketing behind Avengers at the beginning of summer. I think we'll start to see that stuff roll out towards the end of summer. It wouldn't surprise me if they do like a once a week or once a month, and then when they're all released, then we see all of Defenders hit. That's spitballing. But I think I don't think it makes sense to confuse audiences, especially if the shows aren't all ages, by hyping them at the same time as Avengers. So I would imagine that we won't see anything until after Avengers 2 is released in 2015.
Are we going to see big names in these shows? Do you think we'll see big, you know, I know House of Cards, Kevin Spacey, we've seen, you know, Arrested Development had some names in it. Do we think we're going to see some really big names and directors and filmmakers take on these shows, or do you think they're going to kind of go up the up and coming route, Sean?
That's absolutely why I'm wondering if they're going to do it as a one big episode, you know, dump, because then you can essentially get a director, you know, and a star who can commit to filming, you know, a lot of it up front. I think if it's a traditional series where it's going to tie them up for several months, you're going to have a hard time convincing someone big to stick around for that. And then does that mean, like, does the Daredevil 13-episode series, is it going to require different directors, you know, like where someone big does the pilot the way, you know, Fincher did the House of Games pilot, mm-hmm. but then they passed it on to people like Joel Schumacher, and they did a fine job with it. But I'd almost like to see someone like Joe Carnahan, you know, tackle the Daredevil one and do it for a month, you know, and then and just give you a 13-episode arc that's filmed with a recognizable name, I would prefer that model than seeing, you know, different filmmakers with different voices try to come in and keep the same tone over the course of a 13-episode seasons. And so I hope that the Netflix model, you know, means that Marvel's going to let one person from one team sort of tackle it and give us a quote-unquote season. It's just the traditional definitions of these television seasons is completely different from what we used to know, and I think it creates a lot of mystery, but it creates a lot of excitement. I hope that, like, one person gets the opportunity to tell a 13-episode-long Daredevil story, and same thing with, like, Luke Cage or Iron Fist.
Yeah, I will say this. You mentioned Joe Carnahan. After his ridiculously awesome Breaking Bad episode, they'd be bonkers not to chase Rian Johnson and try to get him involved in this in some capacity, because I think people are kind of have a hankering to see him getting into this world a little bit. So let's start wrapping up and talk about kind of the biggest takeaway from this, and I guess what we're most excited to see out of this. And I'll start. Jessica Jones. Here's Marvel finally giving a female something. I know they're not giving her her own big movie, but they're giving her own TV show. And so I think that it's nice to see that Marvel is listening to sort of the voices out there that are crying out and saying, look, let's get women more involved. And they're doing it on the big screen to a certain capacity with their female characters, but it's nice to see them give a female character her own show with Jessica Jones. So that's what I'm most interested in seeing. John, yourself, what's your biggest takeaway from this?
For me, I think the thing I'm going to anticipate the most beyond casting, again, is how much they're interested in pushing the envelope. Are they going to be safe like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is safe? Or are they looking to start to add some really distinct flavors to their overall product line? That's the big question mark for me. I hope even if, you know, no matter what direction they go, whether they go more adult or whether they go more all ages, I hope that all four shows have their own distinct personality, and that it doesn't just feel like, you know, if Daredevil comes on first, Iron Fist doesn't just feel like Daredevil season two, that it feels like its own thing. That's sort of my hope for the projects.
I agree with you there, and it would be cool. You know, they all take place in Hell's Kitchen. It's hard to do four different TV shows that take place in the same location and make them feel all completely different. I think that will be a huge task that they'll have up against them. Sean, your biggest takeaway?
Just how big Marvel is now. I mean, we joked in the podcast this week about how there are going to be five Marvel movies, you know, before we see another DC film. And now, oh, by the way, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And hey, while you mention it, we got a Netflix series launching. And, you know, the big DC news is they might have Nighthawk in the Batman-Superman movie. So it's kind of just, we talk about this two-horse race between the big, you know, comic book giants. It's not a race at all. It's, you know, someone's driving a NASCAR and DC is still on roller skates, basically. It's great. I love Marvel. I love DC, but I grew up a Marvel kid, and it feels like they are now just a prevalent, you know, they're part of the fabric of pop culture, and they plan on being that way for generations, it sounds like.
They are. And, you know, on top of this deal, one thing that I do find interesting as well is that starting in 2016, Netflix is going to be the sole distributor of everything that Disney puts out, movies, television series, animated movies. They're going to be the exclusive U.S. subscription television service for that. Wow. So that's another interesting thing that, you know, when all of these films start hitting, you know, on demand and stuff, they're going to be on Netflix. And so, I mean, if you're any kind of superhero fan and you don't have Netflix yet, start figuring out a way to scrounge around $8 a month, because I think they're really changing the game in terms of the way we perceive television shows and the way they piece them together and put them together. And it's just really exciting to see. John Golson and Sean O'Connell, thank you very much for joining me. I know I ripped you guys out of what you were doing this morning to talk about this, but this is big news and it's really exciting. And thank you for hanging out for 15 minutes.
Yeah, man. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Eric.
Awesome. All right. Take care, guys. We will meet again to talk more Marvel in the near future. And enjoy your weekend at the movies. And go see Thor: The Dark World, because it's pretty good. Later.